Blog Talk Radio. Quiet.
I'm Marcia Joyner, your host with Betrayed by Hospice. I hope all of our listeners had a good time with family and friends over Thanksgiving. The holidays were very important to my parents, and sadly, my mom was not there to celebrate with us anymore because in 2017, a hospice in Georgia decided her life wasn't worth living and she was costing more money than she was worth, and she was euthanized under the guise of compassionate care. I started doing this talk show, Betrayed by Hospice, to warn others of the dangers of hospice. I don't want anyone to be misled like our family was into believing hospice was good and was there to help. Let me be clear. All hospices are not bad, but the ones that I have personally witnessed and heard about are. Most hospices prey on the most vulnerable people, the elderly. They show up at the hospitals, go into a patient's room, and start talking to the family or the patient about how they can come in to make their life easier so they don't have to go to the hospital with an emergency or go to the doctor's office. They can come in and provide services to you and the caregiver. They come to your home, provide a support to you. A nurse comes in, checks your vitals. They sit with the patients while the caregiver goes out, and they can even bring in food. Sounds good, doesn't it? To have all that attention and care, but it comes at a high price. They tell you it won't cost you anything. Money-wise, that is true, because Medicare and Medicaid will pay for it. Even the hospices that say nonprofit are profiting from people dying under their fake care. Providing medical care to the elderly is costly, and it is determined that these people are not considered viable to society, but to their family, most of their family, their value is that we love them and we want them to live until it's their time to die. We don't want them to be drugged, starved, dehydrated to a painful death. But it's cheaper to put them in a coma and euthanize them. I know that sounds horrible, but that is what is occurring and people need to be aware. You can't turn away from this. You have to be aware of it. As I stated, my mom was murdered in 2017. She had had a bout in the hospital, and they told us at that time that she qualified for hospice because she had congestive heart failure, which was being treated successfully with medications. And they told us the lines that they could help my dad, who was her caregiver. They'd bring in meals. She wouldn't have to go to the doctor because she didn't have any cartilage in her joints. Getting in and out of the car was painful. And they eventually talked us into it, and one of the reasons was that our dad had been the hospice chaplain at that particular facility for 15 years, 10 years earlier, and we were promised they wouldn't hasten her death. We believed them. We were naive. In early June, they showed up at the house, and they said they're taking them to the hospice respite facility in Perry, Georgia, so that my dad could get some respite care, not because my mom was worse, not because my mom needed to go, but for the caregiver to get respite care. The transport vehicle had already been arranged. Once she arrived, immediately they started drugging her. We were lied to, and a lot went on during those 11 days. But I've told my mom's story before, and that's not why I'm saying this. After I read the medical records, it stated that when they arrived at the house to take them, kidnap them, it says, the kitchen had flour on the countertop. It was a mess. Dishes were in the sink, dirty and clean clothes on the couch. And both of my parents were sleeping when they arrived, and my dad seemed alarmed when they woke him. You think? I would be alarmed if somebody just comes in and touches me, wakes me up. They were not expecting anybody to be there. They showed up unannounced. And they state to them, we're taking you to a facility where your husband can get rest and we'll take care of you in the meantime. Again, a lot happened, but the reason that I'm telling you this, there is a reason for this, my purpose behind it, which has to do with our guest tonight. My dad had cooked grits and catfish, which was his favorite for breakfast, and he served him and Mom. And he did leave a mess behind, dirty dishes in the sink. Okay, that's fine. They would go to sleep, and then when he woke up, he would go in there, take care of the dishes, and start lunch again. And that was routine for them. That's not a crime to have dirty dishes. Doesn't mean they can't be trusted to take care of themselves or that there is any danger or, for that matter, that it's anybody's business what their house looks like. They were removed from their home, and my mama never returned because they murdered her. There is no doubt in my mind, after reading the records, that that is exactly what happened. So after this time, I did a lot of research online looking to find out what had happened and try to understand what was going on. And I ran across an article about a family in Las Vegas that had been literally kidnapped from their home and taken to a facility. Once in this facility, their daughter was not allowed to see them many times, and their belongings were taken, their bank accounts emptied, and their life changed for almost 2 years while they were held in captivity. This story added to my shock about what was going on in the world and happening to our elderly people, and what I had just seen happen to my sweet mom. I just couldn't wrap my head around it, and it happening every day. So reading their stories about the lies that were made up about the status of their home and how some people seemed disheveled, couldn't take care of themselves, really hit home with me. After learning what I have learned for the past 2.5 years since my mom's murder, I believe they were painting a picture so that after they got rid of my mom, they could come in, remove my dad from his home, steal his belongings and any assets that he had. Fortunately for him and for us, we sold the house and he moved north with me, so any plans that they had were thwarted. But I believe that he was next on their list to be kidnapped. Tonight, my guest, Julie Lynn Belshi, is here to tell about what happened with her parents, Rudy and Rennie North, who were kidnapped in September of 2013 out of their home and moved into a facility without any notification. This was in Las Vegas, Nevada, and you may have seen newspaper articles or television interviews about this horrible case. But I don't want to jump ahead and tell you everything, so I'm going to let Julie tell you. But there is a movie out. It's called The Guardians. It's a documentary. And after tonight's show, you may want to go to Amazon Prime, or I guess there's other ways to watch that, and watch that documentary because Julie, as well as her family, are in that movie, and it talks about what we're going to talk about tonight and the sinister person who guardianized her parents, April Parks, and is actually serving time now. So I want to let you know that sometimes in your effort to pursue something, if you just don't give up and you keep going on and pursuing it, sometimes people do succeed. And this is one of those stories. It's bittersweet, but it is a success story. So, Julie, with that, I'd like to thank you for coming on the show tonight and sharing this story with all of us. I know how hard it is for you to talk about it again, but it's important that people know this is happening. Julie, are you on with us?
I've got her online, Marcia, but...
Okay, Julie, if you hit mute on your phone, can you unmute yourself?
Oh, hello?
Yes.
Yeah, there.
Okay,
here I am. I had mute on.
There
sorry.
You go. Okay.
Good.
All right.
Well, thank you for having me. And, yes, this is very important for everybody because you're speaking about our mortality. This can happen to everybody. It's not it's like a cancer. My parents, going back to 2013, were sitting in their own home, and there was a knock on the door, and my father had just gotten done. He was sitting on the couch watching CNN or watching whatever news channel he watched, and my mom was in the bedroom, and it was a setup from the very beginning. It was a Labor Day weekend. Nobody was supposed to be there. They did have a home health care agency coming in a couple times a week because my mother was just recuperating from chemo, and she had chemo neuropathy, so she was in a wheelchair at the time. So there was a knock on the door, and it was this home health care agency, and they were pretty surprised, but yet they were on a friendly basis with them, and they said, oh, they had just stopped by and wanted to see how they were doing, and, so they all started talking, and then, you know, a couple of minutes later, there was another knock on the door, and, the home health hospice people, they got up, and they were ready to go answer the door. My dad was behind them and opened the door, and there was April Parks and her business partner, Mark Simmons, standing there with another lady who I can't remember her name, but she was one of their helpers. And they were all three standing there, and my dad didn't know who they were. And the home health care people said, oh, yeah, just let them in, you know, like they knew who they were. And, my dad lets them in the house, and she comes over to my father, April Parks, and says, I'm an officer of the court, and have three choices. One is that you look at this as a respite, and you can come with us and leave your house for 2 weeks. Second, we can, if you don't cooperate, we can call the police and the fire department and can possibly be arrested. And third, you could be taken to a hospital, separated, and put into a psych ward. My father at that point said, I want to see your legal documents. And she said that she didn't have them with her. She would have them to him in 2 hours and for him to, basically start getting ready. And at that point, my mom walked in to her living room, her family room, and there were five people there. And my mom was like, what's going on here? And, oh, ma'am, nothing to worry about, nothing to be alarmed about. And I'm an officer of the court, and April Parks repeated the same thing that, you need to get all of your things together. You're coming with us. We're going to take you for a respite. You need a respite. You'll return home. And then gave her the second choice. The police, the fire department can come. You can possibly be arrested if you don't comply with us. The third choice was going to the hospital and, being separated. And, at that point, my dad was just looking at all of them, and people that, were from the home health care hospice, they were saying, Rudy, you need to really listen to him, to them, and, start getting your stuff together. Well, they said, okay, you have like 10 minutes, don't worry, just go ahead and grab a couple of your things. My mom started crying and started telling them, get out of my house, get out of my house. I'm not going anywhere with you. I don't know who you are. And she was panicked, and she started saying, I want to call my daughter. Oh, we'll call her for you, don't worry. They said, let's, start getting your things together. Well, my mom went into her bathroom and started getting a couple of things together. Mind you, she's in a wheelchair. And my dad grabbed a couple of things, and off they went. and they did not know where they were going to. Literally, my mom and dad, my mom was crying the whole way, saying, where are you taking us? How could you do this? Who are you? She was hysterical. She did not want to leave her home.
Of course not.
And, you know, my dad, I guess, was putting up the big, you know, front as the husband, you know, trying to calm her down because, you know, look at these crazy options he was given. You know, mm-hmm. all he wanted to do is make sure that they would be staying together, that he could be with her.
Right. Let me back up one second.
Sure.
I want to make sure the listeners understand this. At that time, your dad, Rudy, was 76 years old. And
correct.
Your mama, Rennie, was 74.
Correct.
People those ages live in homes by themselves, take care of themselves, I mean, to 80s, 90s. That is not unusual. So that, to me, is a very young age for somebody to make a determination. Exactly, to make a determination that you can't take care of yourself, you're not capable. I also wanted to go back just a little bit. Your mom had – you had been taking care of your mom every day, your mom and your
mm-hmm.
dad, for like six
mm-hmm.
months, 6 days a week.
Right.
So you were there – and you don't live but a few miles away.
Yeah, I live, you know, 15 minutes away from them, 10 minutes if, you know, I drove too fast. But, you know, basically 15 minutes. And I was doing that just making sure because, you know – at the time, you know, there were certain health issues and things that, you know, they had needed help with. So I said, you know, I'll come in and I'll help you. At first I had a girlfriend do it and, you know, it just didn't work out. So I said, you know, I'll do it. And, you know, then it got to be where it was 6 days a week and it wasn't just 4 hours a day what I was supposed to be doing. It was like 8 hours a day, you know.
Sure.
And if I had it, you know, if I didn't have my own family and such, you know, then it wouldn't have been a big deal. But then we actually started to look for a home that was bigger and, you know, so that we could move them into, you know, and really, you know, like watch over them because we saw just signs of, you know, just things, you know, they needed a little bit of help. You know, my dad could still drive.
Sure.
He was still going to do all the errands. My mom just needed help with her shower. She was still mobile. She could still get around and cook with him in the wheelchair. She could still stand a lot. She
mm-hmm.
was doing her physical therapy. She was getting better.
How you people were brought in. Your dad had gone to the doctor, and they said you need to bring help in. And that's
basically,
how...
yeah, my dad had gone in to the doctor and, you know, and they said, yeah, you need to, you know, have help come in and help you take care of Ronnie. They said in the papers, the legal documents, that he was incompetent. He was not able to handle his finances. I mean, when I read it, I was like, are you kidding me? You know, he can handle his life. He can certainly handle his finances. He can certainly handle cleaning the house. The house was immaculate, which they said it wasn't. The same thing was said, their house was deplorable, which, you know, it never was. Even when it was dirty, it wasn't like a dirty household. You know what I'm saying? It was maybe a piece of clothing on the floor. That was their dirty.
Right.
Because they were,
but this
they
is,
were just very clean people.
But this is what they do. They come in, they paint this horrible picture so that they can, you know, take the information to, you know, a judge and say these people cannot take care of themselves medically, physically, financially, and even though
exactly.
they had a daughter very close in the area, they make a determination that this individual needs to be guardianized, and the guardian is not somebody in the family. It's a complete stranger, and it's a business for them.
Oh, yeah, because they thought they really did think that, you know, my parents lived nicely. And when we had spoken, you know, before I told you, you know, it was just their way of living. They lived nice. They lived on the golf course. They had a nice home for the two of them. They had nice things they acquired among the years. You know, they've been together
sure.
for 65 years, 63 years married.
Right.
And
so, they show up. You're not notified at all that they've taken your parents somewhere.
No.
So they're your mom's crying, and they take them off.
Yeah, I had plans. The kids were getting ready to start school. Every year we would go over there. We would have dinner. They would give the kids a check, you know, for clothes, school clothes. We'd all sit down. They'd all, you know, we'd all talk about school and, you know, wish them luck. And I had plans to see them Friday with the boys. Well, I spoke to my mom last on Thursday, the 29th. On the 30th, I called 5-10 times on each phone, on their landline and also on their cell phone. No answer. Which is, it's just not my parents, because I'm the only surviving child. We lost both my sister and brother. And so I was extremely close with my parents. I always, like, every day, talk to my mom a couple times a day, make sure everything was okay, would run out there, make sure, you know, if they needed me. It was that kind of relationship. So I didn't know where they were. And this was a Labor Day weekend. So for 4 days, actually, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, did not know where they were. There was the newspapers were piling up in the front door. That was the giveaway, because I went back there. I kept going back there thinking something happened. My husband first said, well, maybe they went, you know, to the store. Maybe they had an appointment. You know, come on, Julie. You know, don't jump the gun, you know. But I knew something was wrong.
Wasn't your dad's car there?
I couldn't see. I couldn't see in the garage, and my kids were like, you know, come on, you know, we need to open up the garage. I said, no, we're not getting in trouble. We can't do that, you know. And it's funny too, because 2 weeks earlier, I had just given my dad his key back to the house, and I'm like, you know, I was trying to look in between the blinds and just any sign of them, and the house was just, it was closed down. They were gone.
That's scary.
Yeah, it petrified me. The first thing that came to my mind was that somebody had come into my parents' house and kidnapped them. I don't know who it is, but I know my parents well enough that if something was going to happen, that they would take 2 minutes and call and say, we're going here, we're going to do this, don't worry, we're okay.
Mm-hmm.
But there was no call.
Right, they didn't want them to call you. I mean, they even said
no.
They would call you.
And the thing about it is, if you walked in their home, there were pictures of, you know, me, my sister, my brother, all of their grandchildren. They had 6 grandchildren. The time we lost one, you know, my nephew last year to a drunk driver who was only 17. But they had pictures of all the grandchildren all over. They knew they had family. I mean, there were pictures on her refrigerator, all her grandkids, on the coffee table, posters of all the grandkids, all the little art things that the kids make for their grandparents, all over, you know, in her office and in his office, and just signs of, yes, they have a family.
Right. So when did you realize who had taken them?
So I kept going back and forth to their home, and on Tuesday, I went to their house, and there was a sign on the door that said, in case of emergency, contact April Parks, NCG guardian, and her phone number. And so I ripped the sign off the door and you know, I'm shaking. Got into, you know, my car, calmed myself down, and drove home because I wanted to be at home and I wanted to have time to, you know, be able to be professional and talk to her because I was a wreck.
Sure.
I didn't know where they were. You know, these are my parents. So got home, called her, and asked to speak. Her agency picked up and asked to speak to her. She got on the phone immediately, and I told her who I was. And she, you know, and I told, and I asked her, you know, where are my parents? And she told me, oh, your parents are okay. They are okay. They're being well taken care of. I said, I want to know where they are. I want to go see them right now. And she said, oh, well, they're at Lakeview Assisted Living Facility. And then we said a couple more words, and I said, do you know that's illegal what you did? I said, you can't walk into my parents' house and take them. I said, you literally walked in their house and took them. You're kidnapping them. She says, oh, no, no, this is legal. This is legal. She kept telling me, you know. And then I guess I raised my voice with her, and she didn't like it. So I already knew where they were. She told me where they were, and that I could go see them. So, you know, I hung up and said goodbye. And, you know, my husband and I jumped in the car and we drove. I mean, she moved them all the way out by Lake Mead. I mean, and from where we live, where my parents live, that's a good hour and a half. From where I live, it's a good hour away. And we went to see them immediately. And when we got to the place where they were, I asked us, you know, to see them, and they told us, you know, okay, they're in this room. So we got in the elevator, and we're walking down the hallway, and there's a man that grabs me, and he tells me, you've got to help me, you've got to help me. I didn't even know who he was. He said, you know, this April Parks, she's going to kill me, she's going to kill me. And, I mean, I hadn't even seen my parents yet, and I'm just looking at my husband like, you know, you can't make this shit up, you know. This is, like, unreal. What in the hell is going on, you know.
Exactly.
And that was Adolfo Gonzalez, who no longer is with us, who used to work, you know, with my former grandfather at MGM. And so my parents became really good friends with him. He was a little man from Spain. He was a maitre d' for years. And at MGM, and he was a wonderful soul, beautiful man, who had worked very hard for everything he had. And she went to his house, April Parks, went to his house when she took him, and she had all of his dogs were his life. She had his dogs euthanized, and she had all of his trees that he had, like, all beautiful fruit trees, vegetable garden in his house and outside. And shit, all, who does this unless they are, like, a sociopath? She had all of
evil.
The trees cut down to stumps.
Just evil.
I mean, just beyond. I couldn't even imagine, you know. And
mm-hmm.
and this man that had worked so hard for everything, he kept, you know, eventually he did get out. But that just killed him when he went home and he saw that, you know. And he kept saying to me, where's my Blackie? Where's my Blackie? That was his dog who he adored.
Well, sure.
He had, like,
that's just cool, you know, to do that.
Oh, yeah, but
that's
their way of being. That's their way of being. Anything close and dear to you, this is what she did. She got rid of it. She showed who was in power and who is in control.
Well, look where it's landed her now.
Yeah.
they go to this. and you still try to check to see if there's a court order, but you're not given a copy of that court order because your dad asked for it too, right?
My dad asked for it. Yeah, so at this point I said I got into their room. They looked horrible. They looked on their coffee table was a hospice bus, you know, basically telling them you're dying. Well, you got 1 foot in this universe. You've got 1 foot out. It's okay if you don't eat anymore. It was a guide for them that she left on their table. And I'm like, wait a second. My parents aren't dying. You know, this is like she's Stockholm syndroming. So, you know, they're being Stockholm syndrome. You know, she's telling them you're dying. And even in one of the reports for my mom, it said, oh, she's got 2 months to live. And I'm like, what? You know, she just, you know, beat the cancer. She had no cancer left in her body. She had leukemia. She it was in remission. So, yeah, I see this book on the table. I take the book, you know, and, you know, I start asking my dad about the legal documents. Did he have anything? He said, no, she said she'd have them to me in 2 hours. So the next day, I went to an attorney that was friends with my grandmother years and years ago, walked in, and I basically was frantic, told them what had happened, and they sat me down in the room, and they copied off everything they could that she had filed, and that's how I obtained the papers, not by her. She didn't give them anything. She wanted them in the dark, and then when I showed up, it was... Yeah, she didn't want me there at all.
Well, you were a problem because when you came, you know, your parents were very docile because, A, they didn't know what was going on, and they're just very docile. When you come in, they're going to start saying, Julie, get me out of here. Take me home.
Yeah.
So, obviously, you're going to do whatever you can to get them out.
Yeah, my mom kept saying, you know, get me out of here, calling me at night. And, you know, it was funny because at first their phone worked perfect. But then as we got further along in exposing this, I had almost 18 months, it seemed longer, but 18 months of, you know, just by myself, basically, trying to figure out what to do, and I had reached out to a former councilman here, and I said, I need help. I've got to get this exposed because, you know, I'm just not going to be able to do it by myself. They're going to walk all over me. And so he put me in touch with a couple of people that owned the Vegas Voice, and so my husband and I went and had lunch with them, and we told them the story about my parents, and they looked at us like we had, you know, three heads, you know, that we were like, my parents got kidnapped from their home, and we're explaining this to them, and they're like, what? And, you know, and this is legal, and this is how it was done, and, you know, and I'm pleading with them, please come out and meet them, because if you meet them, you'll understand. And they did. They came out to their place, and they sat down with my mom and dad, and then they ran a story on my parents. And then Steve Miller had put me in touch with a couple of other people who were involved in different situations in the family court, with their loved ones, and you know, we all started to group together and work together. We had Rana and Dan, Elizabeth Indig. She's also in the movie. Her mom passed. Her mom, they took her mom's home away from her. They sold it for pennies on the dollar. Her mom had, and everything was stated also in a will that everything was supposed to be, she was supposed to be taken care of, never happened. She died in a state institution here. And, you know, this is a woman who, you know, husband made sure everything was taken care of. Well, they took it all away. And Elizabeth fought very hard.
Well, at one point when you were talking to Parks, and you were angry, which you would be, she actually charged you for an 8-minute conversation, and she charged your parents' estate $24 just because you had a conversation with her, and she thought what the conversation was is because you were telling them they had rights. And she, of course, didn't agree because she had taken their rights, but charged your parents $24 to have a conversation with you. And that's what guardians, I'm not saying all guardians are bad. I don't know all guardians. But from what I've heard, that they charge the estate just these enormous amounts of money that they're stealing from the elderly. They're taking everything.
Yeah.
And they went through your parents' house.
There's no oversight.
Well, it's like in hospice, they kill people and they get away with it, and there is no oversight. Mm-hmm. So they went through your parents' house and looked through their belongings to see what they could steal and sell to make money off of. They also emptied your parents' whatever liquid assets they have. She moved it into her bank account. So tell me about when she went through and they found pictures that they felt like they have someone who comes in and actually tells them how much things are worth and if it can be sold for anything.
Well, they had, before this even happened, just going back a little bit, my father's doctor came over to their house and was looking through their home while they're talking to them and saying, when they get older, they want to be just like them. They're such a beautiful couple. And meanwhile, the husband's looking at the pictures and, looking close. And they had, some nice artwork. It was just very obvious because to my mom, she called me right after. She's like, that was strange. They came to our house and the husband's looking, our pictures. But, at the time, I didn't know very much about guardianship. I didn't know these were all, red flags. They were being set up from the very beginning.
Mm-hmm. They were scoping the joint. Exactly.
Oh, yeah. Big time. And, and they did a good job because they had, notified the public guardian, and the public guardian gave the case to the prior guardian, April Parks. And once she gave it to them, it's one thing if your parents, or if your loved one is, let's say, eating cat food, microwaving the cat. If they really need help, if their gas is off, if their electricity is off, if they're sitting there in the dark, if they really have dementia, if they really have Alzheimer's horribly. It's another thing if you walk into a home and people are living there and they're doing just fine.
They're eating meals. Your dad was cooking.
Yeah.
Your mom's putting on makeup.
Even when she walked in, she said, I have my hesitancy. She says, I'm a little bit hesitant in taking you. Well, what the hell? And then walk out. Because I'm very hesitant if you walk into my parents' house and you don't notify me. Which they're supposed to do if you're over the age of 14. You're supposed to be notified when they take your loved one.
Right, and as you said, they knew that they had children And I'm sure they even knew that you lived in the area. That you talked about it.
Yeah, the minute they turned the key, they have access. They already had taken over their bank account. They already took over everything that they had. They already. It's almost like, you know, turnkey. Okay, everything's ours. Now all we have to do is get the people out of here.
Mhm. And keep them alive until all of their assets are gone, and then the drugs that they did start giving your parents. Before I go to that, let me say your brother had some paintings in the house that your mom wanted, and because they weren't worthy of any money, they threw them out by the curb, and you found them.
Well.
So
that was actually
me.
That was actually for me. So a lot of the cases you hear about now, and I'm not saying this in So a lot of the cases you hear about now, it's about money. Okay, let's face it. It's about it's mostly in families, and they're fighting over money. This one owes this one money, and that one, you know, and they are changing the will at the last minute. Okay, mine was different. My case was I wanted to save my parents' lives. Okay, and
absolutely.
And along with it, I wanted the picture that the Disney artist drew of my sister and my brother, because those were the only pictures I had left of them, which I have them now in my bedroom. And so when I got up and I spoke in the government's building, and they had it a syndicate TV, so we were speaking to, I don't know, the Senate, or we were speaking to politicians. So I told them, I said, this is like a modern-day Holocaust. I said, I am telling you, my brother was an artist. He had a huge portfolio. That's important to me. I don't care about the monetary thing. I wanted that. I wanted the pictures of my parents, their wedding album. How do you strip away memories from people like that? That was the most important thing to me, so I could pass that on. Show it to my children. I mean, all the other stuff was just stuff. You know, sure, there were things that we would love to have. They had beautiful, you know, certain beautiful, you know, items, furniture, but that didn't matter to me. I was more concerned with the pictures. And
right. But didn't they throw them out on, if they weren't value, if they did not see value, didn't they throw them out on the curb and you found them out there?
Yes, they did. We kept driving by the house and we were warned by their friend. He lived in the neighborhood. He says, Julie, there's like 6-7 hefty bags on the driveway. So we went there, and it's like they sprayed them with like some kind of Raid or something. They smelled horrid. And I found my brother's portfolio, and it was folded in half, so I was just like, oh, no. And I looked, and there was nothing in it. But so my husband looked in another bag, and they had placed all of his pictures in this other bag. But that's only after, like, I had, you know, spoken out. You know, if I never spoke out and never exposed this and never put a video up, I put a video up of my parents on Facebook. And then I got threatened that I better take it down or we were going to get sued for, you know, slandering them. And
for
we were fixing the litigants. Yeah.
Right, for telling the
for
truth.
For telling the truth. Yeah.
So,
absolutely.
And they kept telling your dad that his car would be there. And they wound up selling it.
Yeah, they ended up selling that, and they kept telling them that, you know, we're just taking care of everything for you. We're keeping it safe. All your stuff is safe. You know, no, it's not all safe.
No,
you know, they're doing away with everything as fast as they can, and you know, and they do a spend down theory. That's what they call it. They spend everybody down. So if you have money, they'll spend all the money down, and then they put you on Medicaid. And then they make money from that. And money follows the person. So they constantly are making money because they can bill. They can bill Medicaid. And, you know, they have their ways that they're in the system. And they're constantly making money off of our loved ones. And it is the most, like, I knew evil in my life, but then to come across this, I was just, there were no words. There were no words that somebody would come in my parents' house and hijack their life. And by hijacking their life, they hijacked my life, my family's life, because there was nobody wanted to help us until, thank God, we had met a couple of people. We had met Steve Miller, who put me in touch with Rana and Dan, put me in touch with Rick and Terry Black, put me in touch with then we got, you know, Rick had done an episode of his father-in-law on local ABC here, and then they wanted us to do the next one because they couldn't believe it was my paternal parents, you know, and they both were taken. So we did that, and then
you spoke out. I mean, spoke out every opportunity that you got.
Every opportunity I had, I spoke in front of the commissioners. If there was a little town, meeting, city hall meeting, my aunt used to make a joke with me. She goes, "What are you going to do, take on city hall?" I said, "Yeah, I guess if I have to." So, yes,
if it works.
Every opportunity.
So, now, one of the, you mentioned him earlier, Mr. Gonzalez. He's actually the one that told your dad not to take the medicine because they were actually giving them antipsychotics. Was that what they were giving them?
He had warned them not to take a shot because when he first got there, they gave him a shot and he said he didn't wake up for like 2 days. And he was a healthy man. Like he was, you know, a smaller man, but he was, you know, healthy. He got up at like 5 and he'd go for a walk and he would try not to take his medicine because they'd watch him. So he said he always go into the bathroom and set it out. And, you know, he would tell my parents, be careful, do not take the medicine, do not take the medicine. My mom, it was getting harder for her because she was getting to the point where she was getting so sick. She had blood clots. She was going to the hospital a lot. She was gaining so much weight. I mean, they had her on 13 different medications when I finally got her out of there. And she had blood clots in her legs. She did not know where she was. She was just a different person. It took me a year and a half.
Any of us would be.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Of us would be. And they had, I'm looking at the list here. It said they had her Valium, Prozac, Temazepam, Oxycodone, and fentanyl.
Yep.
Benadryl. That's what she was on.
They had her on so many. I had a list of all the medicines that they had her on when I got her out, and I went to get her prescriptions and I brought them to the pharmacy. My pharmacist said, "Julie, it can't possibly have one person on all of this. We'll kill them." And I said, "Well, I guess that's what she was trying to do, wasn't she?"
Mm-hmm.
I mean, my mom was laying there comatose. I was like, "Mom." And even she said to the doctor one day that worked with April Park, she said, who is my neighbor? She said to him, you know, help me. told me he ran out of there. He didn't want, he didn't care. He was making good money. He was helping April Park sedate all the patients.
Well, she had a system worked out where they would bring patients to her and let her know about patients who would potentially meet her needs, and have a doctor fill out paperwork that said they had dementia or they needed assistance. I mean, it's kind of how hospice finds out, you know, that somebody's been in the hospital a couple of times a year, and they swoop in and say, we're here to help. So at the end,
it's a nightmare, because these poor people, you know, they're older, they're minding their own business, they get a knock on the door, and she's already electronically filed, already has temporary guardianship. So before they even know it, they already are under guardianship. They don't even know.
And don't answer the door, you know, they would have probably broken the door down. I mean,
I wouldn't have answered the door. I wouldn't have done this. I look at it all, and I'm like, I'm laughing, because you know what? It wouldn't have mattered if you answered the
door.
It
wouldn't matter.
They'll break your door down, yeah.
Right, right. So at Lakeview Terrace, where they were, they hired a new director who actually turned out to be somewhat of a saving grace, right? Because she didn't understand why you were being, you know, kept away from your parents, and why
she was saving grace. It took us a while. Took us a while to work with her. You know, it took a good, you know, at least a year. I told her when I first went in there about April Parks. I didn't know April was threatening her and telling her that, you know, you have to obey my rules, because I'm your master and I tell you what to do, and if you don't, you're going to be thrown in jail. She did end up, towards the end, coming around, of course, and cooperating, as did, you know, the people that had worked for April, including Norheim, who, you know, was the commissioner who was watching over, you know, he was the commissioner who was appointed by Judge Charles Hoskins to overlook all of the adult guardianship cases. And so he became a state witness, too, after April Parks in 2015 was indicted. Also, Heidi Kramer became a state witness who should be in jail with April Parks, because she would take off, you know, the women who were laying there sleeping, the elderly women who became wards. She'd take their wedding rings off. She'd go through their drawers, steal from them.
She stole
their wedding
rings? It was
never enough for these people. Oh, yeah.
Oh,
it was
God.
Never enough for these people.
Well, actually,
never
Parks
enough.
Started moving people out of the Lakeview facility.
Out of Lakeview. Sure she did. Sure she did, because you know why? She owed them money. She owed them $20,000 or more, and she couldn't afford it because she was being indicted, and they were looking into her accounts, and I think something happened where they were freezing certain things, and yeah, she didn't have the funds, so she moved them in the middle of the night, and she took their animals away and euthanized their animals.
What a low life.
Oh yeah.
And so she told your parents that she was moving them out in 2015, and they've been there what, like 17 months,
and
they've gotten used to their neighbors, you know.
Yeah, and they wanted, she told them she was moving them so they could be closer to me, because then where she was moving, that was like basically 5-10 minutes away from me, right? So I thought, okay, this is a good thing. But I was scared, because the place she was moving them to used to be owned by Jared Schaefer, who was the mastermind behind it all. So I was frightened, because I had been contacted by people, at that point, you know, I was pretty public and everything, you know, I put it all over because I wanted people to reach out to me. I wanted to know what was up. Well, long story short, I had people who reached out to me and told me, don't have them move there. It used to be Chancellor Gardens, and my mom died there, and this one says my dad died there. They died of dehydration. So before we went there, before my parents got transferred there, my husband and I went over there, and we got a tour of the place, and she was going to move my parents into a room that my mom, literally it was a room where you walk in and there was like a twin size bed on the left side and then a bathroom in the middle and then another twin size bed on in the back side of the room. And I'm like, this is where my parents are moving? Because at Lakeview, at least they had the front room where they had the couch and a little sitting room and then the master bedroom. And I said, you can't move my mom there. She doesn't even have enough room in her wheelchair, and you're going to have them sleeping in separate beds. That doesn't, it just, you know, you're not doing this. And so I went and kept a long string of emails with her. Even though I couldn't stand her, I kept a long string of emails with her and very professional, like where, you know, so I could eventually, I guess, somehow, some way, you know, use it against her because she had said stuff and I was just like, you know, who does this woman think she is? She thinks she's like this mini god, you know. And
She may have also been painting a really bad picture of you to people. And so with you being calm and professional, she comes across looking like an idiot because nobody else was seeing you that way. But that's what she was trying to paint, a picture of you being, you know, really bad daughter and argumentative.
Oh, yeah. I was a drug addict daughter that lived under the bridge that, you know. You know, meanwhile, I've been, you know, in the same area for 25 years. My husband and I have a business, been married 33 years. And, you know, she had painted a picture, and, you know, of me being, you know, just this irresponsible person. And, you know, and I just was like, you know, no way. I'm not going to stand down to her and allow her to, you know, defame my family. And, you know, she did her best at it, you know, because there were a lot of people she had in her corner. People don't realize, but these private guardians, at least she did, she had a lot of people that were politically connected. They were in her corner. So it was not an easy task to fight against her. It took, there were probably about, I would say, a half a dozen to a dozen victims that we all went and got an appointment with the attorney general, with the investigator, with two investigators, and we got a chance to present our cases to them. They didn't say yes or no to anything, of course. But for 2 years, I was, you know, talking once a week to the police and telling them, you know, my parents' experience and what had happened and cooperating with them.
Well, that was good.
Yeah.
That they were, were at least listening. If you can get an audience, even if they kind of ignore you, at least they're hearing, and something might, you know, jog their memory or ring true to them.
Yeah.
So when you got there the next morning to help your parents with this transition, this move to this much cheaper place, which she tells them it's out of my hands. It's because the finances are running out, and I've got to move you there. So when you get, you and your husband get there to kind of help with the transition, what do you find?
Well, we got there, and the receptionist never told us they had already moved them. She let us. She played along like they were still up there. you know, and we got upstairs, and she had her assistant, Heidi Kramer, there. And she was in the bathroom, and then there were a couple of Hispanic men boxing things up, and it was 8:30 in the morning. And so when I walked in, I said, you know, I walked back and I saw Heidi Kramer in the bathroom, and I said, so this is what you do? You just like nudge my parents and tell them, you know, wake up, you're moving. You don't even give them a chance to, like, you know, get acclimated and have breakfast and then move their stuff over there first and then bring them there so that they can have an easier time transitioning. And she's like, oh, you must be the daughter. You must be the daughter. Oh, I'm going to call April Park. And I said, fine, call April. I don't care. And as she said that, there was like a small hallway because there were big boxes everywhere. And we brushed shoulders. And she turned around immediately to me and said, if you touch me again or you hit me, I'm calling the police. And so my husband said, let's go, which we did. The door was only like 3 or 4 feet away, so we left. We walked down the hallway, went down the elevator, and then Julie Lebo, the director, said, Julie, can I speak to you? So I said, sure. She brought me in her office, and then three cop cars pulled up. And I just started laughing. I'm like, you know, Julie, this is comical. Are they, you know, they're here for me? And she's like, yeah, they just want to talk to you. And I said, that's fine. And
are you there? Julie? I don't know what happened.
I don't either.
Are we still live?
Yeah. Julie?
Okay, maybe she will.
Oh, it says she dropped.
Call back in a second?
Yeah, let's hold on and see if she can get back in.
Okay, so. Right.
Yeah, it's quite a story, isn't it?
It is, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So this, the new director, I need to make this point, that the new director is actually coming around and believing Julie and is seeing that some of the things that have gone on do not seem kosher. And she doesn't understand why April Parks isn't giving Julie any respect and is talking bad about her, because she doesn't see that. And her parents are given no rights, and neither is Julie. So here they are moving her out. Is she back?
No,
they've
not
moved
yet.
Okay, they've moved her parents.
Wait a minute. Here she is.
Okay.
Julie?
All right.
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay,
there you go.
Okay.
All right.
Okay, so pick us up to where the police show up.
Okay,
that's where
so
we lost you.
Okay, so the police show up, and he started questioning me and asking me questions like, you know, basically, you know, what's going on. I said, you know, this horrible guardian has my parents, and she's moving them, and I just came here to support my parents. And he said, you know, okay. He said, do you need to be upstairs for anything? And I said, no, I don't need to be upstairs. I just want to go be with my parents. And he said, okay, you can leave. And at the same time, Heidi Kramer, who worked with April Parks, who turned to a state witness to be, you know, to, you know, keep herself out of jail, to give them, you know, information about what April was doing. She's standing on the other side of the receptionist desk, and I looked at her and I said, you know, you're going to hell for what you're doing to these people, and you're not going to get away with it. I promise you that. And the cop was like, okay, miss, you need to, you know, leave. And you know, and I walked out, you know, the door, and we drove over to the new place, which took us an hour to get there. And we got there to this new place, and we walked in, and I asked, you know, for my parents. I said, you know, I'd like to see Mr. and Mrs. North Rudy and Rennie North, and they said, well, we don't know where they are. And I said, well, you know, April Parks was having them transported here today, and I doubt she took them to the movies or took them shopping. I want to see my parents. And they said, oh, well, we'll go ahead and we'll, like, look for them and we'll find out. So I went and sat down. Well, while I went and sat down, my husband kind of just looked around the place, you know. He's like, where's my wife's parents? And in walks, like 10 minutes later, in walks April Parks with Mark Simmons. And she walks over to me and stands over me and says, Julie, you're not going to see your parents today because you're too emotional. And I said, April, you think you're really good at this, don't you? And she said, well, that's what rumor has it.
Wow.
And just walked away. And I still was sitting down the whole time, right? And she said, if you don't leave, she said, you don't leave. She said, I'm calling the police. I said, April, what's new? Call the police, April. Call them. Call them. I don't care. I want to see my mom and dad. I want to make sure they're okay. I want to give them a hug. And I will leave. And so I walked outside because I was just, like, on fire, and I just, you know, knew better. So I kept my mouth quiet, walked outside, and in drive five cop cars.
You are so bad, Julie. It's taken five police cars to settle you down. That is just
But I'm
ridiculous.
Doing nothing. I'm
I know.
Stand,
you
I'm
just want to see your parents.
I'm there. Yeah. So I said
but
to the
You
cop,
had no right. Your yeah. rights, your parents' rights, had been completely taken away. That is subhuman
oh,
treatment.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So now I'm a terrorist. So now they come up to me, and they said, and I said, oh, you're here for me. And he said, well, what's going on? And I explained that my parents are under this horrible guardianship. I've been going to court. Filing motions, filing petitions. We're almost, you know, to the point where we can get them out. All I wanted to do was say hello to them, make sure they're okay, because they had just been moved. And he said, well, you know, what's she look like? What does April Parks look like? And I said, well, she looks like Satan's mother.
Uh-huh. There you go.
He goes, so the cop started laughing, and he goes, well, I don't want to go in there and talk to her. And I said, well, you know, there she is right there, bright red hair, black and white dress on, you know, that she's stuffed in. And I said, there she is. And he goes, so he sent some other cop in there, like a new rookie cop. He goes, you go in there and you take the report. I'm not walking in there. I'm going to stay here with Julie. And, yeah, so they go in
but
there.
But you got to see them, didn't you?
Huh?
Did you get to see your parents that day?
No, I never got to see them. Never got to see them. I stood outside, and they came back and they had a little like yellow slip, and it was like a trespass slip for my husband and myself that we were not allowed to go there. We were trespassed.
At all? You could not return to the facility at all?
At all. We were allowed to. I could drive up there and pick my father up, but I was not allowed to enter foot into the facility.
They would let you take your dad somewhere?
They would let me, you know, drive and, like, you know, pick him up, but I could not, you know, go in there. And after a while, yeah, it took time to get that, but we were trespassed. So it was interesting because she said, you know, here she moved, you know, my parents closer so that we could see them and be with them more.
But then she wouldn't let you see them.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, she had no.
And you couldn't see your mom because your mom couldn't get down there, you know, in a wheelchair and stuff to see. So you weren't able to see your mom. How long did this go on?
I was trespassed for, I would like to, it was about 3 months. And the good thing, and this sounds terrible, but the good thing is my mom got blood clots in her legs, and she got transported to the hospital. So I lived at that hospital, and when she got transported over there, and April Parks was never around. She was never there. I stayed with my mom day in and day out, and that was a blessing. Because she was there for a good 2 months. She was in the hospital.
Okay. So did she ever go back to Wentworth?
She did go back to Wentworth. She did go back there for a short time. And then, you know, we were, you know, going to court a lot. It was coming to where they were going to, you know, my mom, they were letting go of my mom. They said my mom didn't have to have the guardianship. The only reason my mom was under the guardianship was because my father was taking care of her. So she did not need a guardianship. She could come home to, you know, she could leave. Basically, she wasn't under the guardianship, but my father did. So what I did was I went to take him one day. I said, I'm taking him for coffee. I took him to his old doctor. And I said, and the doctor acted clueless, like the doctor didn't know what was going on, which I didn't believe for a second. It's like, oh, where have you been? Oh, yeah, we haven't seen you for so long. I said, I need this letter. And I already had the letter written out. I said, I need you to write this. I need this for court. I need to get my dad out of this guardianship. Oh, your story's so good. You need to have an international inquiry. Have you been to the FBI? And I'm like looking at her like, you dumb bitch, sorry. I want my dad out of this. You know, don't play stupid with me. You're all part of this, you know. She was friends with the other doctor.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and now all
you know,
of a sudden she's acting like she hasn't seen him?
Yeah, like, where have you been? You know, oh Rudy, it's so good to see you. I'm like, you all are just full of shit. You know, come on. You know where he's been. Your friends were at the doctor that, you know, they all started this whole crap.
Right.
You know, so we got the letter. We presented it to the court. She said, you know, okay, you know, you're, and, I said that, you know, my parents, they do not need a guardian. They need their rights restored. They never needed a guardian in the first place. Even the, one of the attorneys for the attorney general, He walked up to me one day. I saw him in the hallway, excuse me, and he said, Julie, he said, you know, people normally don't get better from dementia. He said, your parents didn't have dementia.
He said they did not have dementia?
No. He said they didn't have dementia. He said, you can tell by when you talk to them. They're very sharp. And he said, you know, sure, when we get older, we forget certain things, but they didn't have dementia.
Well, everybody does.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, at some point in time, but I mean, I can go into another room and forget what I went in there for.
Exactly.
I don't think I have dementia.
No,
so
exactly.
The fact that you got somebody from the paper, I think Raina Goodman, went and visited your parents at one point, and she wrote an article for The Voice that kind of blew this up, and so that started getting attention.
It was the start. We got
correct.
Thank God we had Rana and Dan, and Dan Roberts, because he's the owner, Rhonda's the head editor, so we got them to do that. And then we got in touch with Rick and Terry Black. They were going through a case out here. They're in North Carolina. They were going through a case out here. And Rick and I had started talking. And he started, you know, assisting me. And, you know, the legal part, what I needed to do. Also, he was, he had gotten in touch with Darcy, so his story was on, and locally, and he, and Darcy wanted me to do my story. So that's where the local started. And then once the local attention started with the media here in Las Vegas, then, you know, it went, you know, national. I had emails from Glenn Beck, Laurie Ingraham. They wanted to talk to me. They wanted to know what was going on. Billy Mintz, you know, wanted to do the documentary on what was going on here. American Al Jazeera came out. The New Yorker magazine came out, How the Elderly Lose Their Rights. It was like an avalanche of people who, mm-hmm. you know, were all
just
of a sudden
started getting involved in listening
yeah.
to that. Right.
Yeah, seeing what
so
was going on.
They have a hearing with the same judge who is had to have been aware of what April Parks was doing, and he removes your parents out from under the guardianship as well as others, right?
Right.
And, okay, so when was that? That was in May of 2015?
That was in May of 2015. They were both released. And we got to, you know, we didn't get to take them home immediately. From there, they went back, of course, to Wentworth. And then I had actually all the legal documents that I could take them, but I brought it to the director over at Wentworth, and she was like, oh, you can't take them. I have to call April first. And I said, oh, no. I put my hand on top of her hand. I said, thank you for everything you've done here. We're taking them. And as I'm in her office, my husband and the boys, it was, getting very hot in Vegas. They're taking their stuff in the hallway so she can see, oh, no. They already have the U-Haul here. They're taking their things. They're, you know. I also, at the time, I had somebody on standby in the police department who I became very close to, and we never mentioned his name, but he was on standby on Sahara, and he said, if there's any problems, just let me know.
Mm-hmm.
I had, you know, just like they have all their, you know, everything, you know, covered, I wanted to make sure there was nothing that was going to go wrong.
Right. So eventually, I mean, not maybe like in May, not right then, but they are released. They move in with you into
mm-hmm.
you're in your husband's home with your three boys. And
right.
they start their life. I mean, you know, what they're...
Well, I got both of them back here. And my mom, like I said, she was in pretty bad shape.
Uh-huh.
It took me, you know, a year and a half to get her where she was in walking with her walker again, where she was clear. She knew where she was, who she was again.
And to get her
really
off of the drug?
Them, oh, yeah. But it just got them messed up so horribly because, you know, I'll just, you know, it's like Patty Hearst, okay? When you kidnap somebody, you're brainwashing them. They're scared. And there's nights that, you know, they would wake up and say, I'm like, Dad, what are you doing? And he's like, oh, I'm packing. She's coming to get us. No, she's not coming.
Because they were having nightmares from it.
Oh, yeah. Is she going to come back and get us? If we go to the hospital, will we ever come home? I mean, this really, really messes, you know, a person up. And
sure it does.
You know, not just my parents, but, you know, from my parents to me, to my husband, to my children. It really does number on all of the people that you're taught to respect and trust in your society. The professionals, the so-called professionals, all of a sudden your whole world is turned upside down, inside out. And you're like, who do I trust? Who do I tell this to? Am I going, you know, just normal things?
Well, and you've got a question. How in the world did this happen? And what could I have done differently to keep it from happening? And sadly, there's not a whole lot, because if you get targeted and somebody feels like they can come in and take what you have, even though you have a child who is an adult child that lives nearby, as in your case, they didn't give you the opportunity. They didn't come in and say your parents need somebody to take care of them and give you the opportunity to, you know, either move in or have them move with you, or to get a professional opinion that comes up and says that's absolutely wrong. You know, he's 76, she's 74. There's nothing wrong with them. So nobody was there to question April Parks and to tell her she had made all of this up.
Exactly.
So from
exactly.
that time, there have been some reforms in Nevada that entitle all wards to be represented by lawyers in court.
Correct.
You and
every
I talked about this at
now,
Guardian.
Every ward by law has the right to a attorney, before they were doing this electronically, so everything was nobody was really, you know, knowing what was going on until it was too late. Like, you know, Adolfo, one day he told me he was walking into the court and he saw April, and April said, oh, no, you don't need to go in there. Everything's already done. So now no more of that. Supposedly every elderly person or every disabled person or every child here in Nevada is supposed to be granted a attorney who's with them now.
Mm-hmm.
So that's
and
one.
Hopefully
they do
it's for their benefit.
Yeah,
you know, not
exactly.
just a hearsay or just, you know, to make it look good. So, and guardians have to be bonded.
Guardians have to be bonded. They have to be licensed. They have to. They have 2 times a year. They will be. They look at their books, their accounting. If they find a reason that they're going to put somebody under guardianship, now they have to, by law, notify their family and out of state and give them 30 days to respond before they just go in and grab them. There's also a guardianship form that you can fill out here if you live in the state of Nevada that will go into the secretary lockbox, so you can name people that you want to be your guardian. So if you go to the hospital and let's say you hit your head and you don't know what's going on, but they know who you are and they can bring that guardianship form up. It's called the guardianship nomination form. So that's been passed where they have that form. So,
mm-hmm.
You know, there are precautions that they're taking. There are other laws that they're, you know, being worked on. I just think that by the time, and this might sound pessimistic or, you know, bad, but I think by the time a lot of these laws get passed, they're so diluted that they do little good. This is a very, very lucrative business. This is ran by the government. There's it's just a very well-oiled machine. They have all of their bases covered. This is why it's so damn hard to get people released out of this.
It is a money-making business. It's like hospice. It is in place to do something, and it's not that they're doing that something. They're making it into something else, and it has become a very lucrative business, guardianship and hospice, both of them. We were talking about this a little bit earlier today, but tell us about what was found in a storage unit.
Oh, well, April Parks had a storage unit. In fact, it was where I went to get, you know, the rest of my parents' belongings, which was nothing, basically. And there were 27 urns found in a storage unit. And what I find so odd is that when they did a search warrant, and they took everything and they went through all of her things, all her offices and everything that she supposedly had her name linked to, they didn't find this storage unit. It took, you know, months and months later after she had already been indicted and a man was going to, you know, you have to have that. You can go buy a storage unit. He went and got the storage unit, and in that storage unit was 27 urns. And, you know, she, and that's legal. And that's legal. That's what really gets me is that
to
these
put
poor
urns
people,
in there. To put people's urns in there, people's ashes,
is
it
legal.
It's like a trophy?
Yeah, it's legal. And that's what really gets me is that I talked to this poor woman who had been, when we were in January, when we were all there doing our victim impact payments, and she had been looking for her husband for 6 months. 6 months. Did not know where he was. And the whole time, April Parks knows where these people are. And it's just telling them, oh, don't worry about it. They're okay. They're okay. No, he was dead. And he was in a storage unit.
Wow. That's terrible.
Yeah.
All of it's terrible.
Yeah.
One, you know, when we talk about where we are today, sadly that your mother passed in July the 10th of this year.
Yeah,
but,
we lost my mom, and I know she had cancer, and I know that's what took her, but I also know that her being guardianized pushed her faster into this
Absolutely.
Whole thing because it haunted her. It haunted her. She
right.
never thought this would happen. You know, she said, I never thought I would live in America that was like my, you know, like, you know, these people are treating us like we're second class citizens, you know, they're like Nazis. And, you know, and I just used to reassure her, Mom, you know, you're safe here, you're safe here. And, it was very tough, you know, to go from saving her and getting her home with us, and I'm so grateful we had the time with her, and I'm also
right.
really grateful that she knew how much we loved her. That, you know, we got to tell her, you know, I love you, 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 when she was dying, and she
right.
wasn't
and your son,
isolated. Yeah,
she was with family, and with your son, she got to spend time with her grandchildren.
Yeah, she got to be with her grandchildren. You know, it was tough, but, you know, she was just in
but
so much pain.
It would not have happened had you not been persistent to get her out and your dad out. So, I mean, I commend you for that. I think that's wonderful. It's, as I say, it's a bittersweet success story that, you know, it's sad that she's gone now. You still have your dad, but not having one or the other never makes up for it, right?
Absolutely.
You know,
absolutely.
We love both of our parents, so losing them.
Absolutely, we do.
So,
I wanted to say something. Just kind of ending on a little bit of a good note that I have in front of me. It just says, you know, I hope you become the type of person that brings good energy wherever you go and the type of person people want to be around. I hope you speak what's on your mind, that you raise your voice for injustice, that you tell others that you love them instead of waiting until it's too late. I hope you live louder, shine brighter from this moment on.
That's sweet. I like that. That's very sweet. And that's what I think we all hope to be, you know, mm-hmm. like that.
Yeah,
and
it's daily.
That's a goal to try to achieve.
Absolutely, absolutely.
So, and for our listeners, thank you so much for listening tonight. Julie, it's been very heartbreaking, but I appreciate you getting your story out. And
thank you. It's my pleasure, and thank you very much for having me on. And I hope this makes a difference for one person to not, you know, don't trust people so easily. Please be careful.
Right. That's exactly right. You can't trust everybody without verifying everything. And
yes.
The movie, I do want to watch that movie, the Guardians documentary. So
yeah,
for the listeners.
It's great. It's done greatly. The Guardians, it's directed by Billy Mintz, and it's produced by J.B. Sugar and Billy Mintz, and it's available on Amazon Prime. Also, you can do it on iTunes. You can rent it or buy it. And then the other good article that, you know, to read is, you know, How the Elderly Lose Their Rights, which is by Rachel Aviv, A-V-I-V, in The New Yorker. You can look that up and find it online. And it's very informative. And if anybody has any questions, they can either call me at 949-872-06.
Don't give your number out. Just they can contact you on Facebook if they have questions.
Anybody.
Yeah,
that's fine.
So, I don't want you to give out your number. So,
okay.
All right. Well, you have a good evening. Thank you so much, and we'll be in touch.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Julie.
Okay.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.